His face was a little wrinkled now, and he was much skinnier than when I had last seen him. His name was Gasimu. Ngo Gasimu. He used to be one of the notorious single men in my town. Back then, everyone talked about him not being married. The older people always remarked, "He is old enough and responsible enough to find a good wife, but he likes to be alone. He likes that loose life." He never said anything back then and didn't get upset by what they said. He cooked his own food, and when he was too tired to cook, he ate gari, a grated and dried food made from cassava with honey. There was a period of time when he ate gari with honey for over a week. My mother decided to dish him out a plate every evening. "That food is unhealthy for you," she had said to him, and he smiled, rubbing his head. When Gasimu was by the path, he stopped and examined our faces. He smiled, and that was when I became sure that he was the Ngo Gasimu I knew, because he was missing a front tooth. "You boys want to help me carry some bananas to the village?" he asked, in that manner that adults usually ask young people, so that we knew he wouldn't take no for an answer. "Come on, boys," he motioned for us to follow him into the banana farm. All of us started walking past him as he continued waving his hand as if he was pulling us with an invisible rope. When I approached him, he put his hand on my shoulder and rubbed my head. "Are you still a troublesome boy?" he put on my nose. "There is no time to be troublesome these days," I said. "I see that you look very sad. Your forehead used to glow naturally when you were just a child. Your parents and I used to discuss how unusual that was. We thought it was because you were happy all the time. Your mother said you even smiled while you slept. But when you started your troublesomeness and were angry, your forehead glowed even more. We didn't have any other explanations for your forehead and how it related to your character. And here you are. It isn't shining anymore." He paused for a moment, looking at me. He walked away and began instructing my traveling companions how to pick up a hand of bananas and carry it on their shoulders instead of their heads. "This way you won't break them in half," he explained. I picked up some of the bananas and waited for Gasimu to gather his water jug, machete, and the last bunch. "So how did you get—" I started, but he interrupted. "Your parents and brothers will be happy to see you. They have been talking about you every day and praying for your safety. Your mother cries every day, begging the gods and ancestors to return you to her. Your older brother left to look for you, but he returned about a week ago. His face was sad when he returned. I think he blames himself for losing you." I dropped the hand as he started giving me this news. He continued walking, so I quickly picked up the bananas and followed him. "They will indeed be surprised to see you." He walked slowly in front of me. I was breathing fast and couldn't bring out a word. I wanted to drop the hand and run as fast as I could to the village. My eyelids were twitching, and I felt as if the breeze was passing through my brain. It made me feel lightheaded. Excitement and sadness made me feel as if my heart would explode if I waited any longer. But on such a narrow path, I couldn't walk past all those in front of me. After a few minutes, we came to a river, and I was happy, because at the edge of most villages there was a river, so I thought we should be there any minute now, but we weren't yet. "The village is just over the hill," Gasimu said. It was a long hill with rocks on either side of the path and some unmovable ones that the roadmakers had left in the middle. The path zigzagged up to the top, where, when we finally made it, everyone had to rest for a few minutes. I became angry that we had to rest, and I sat on a big rock away from the group. My eyes followed the brown, dusty path that continued down the hill to the thick forest, through which I caught a glimpse of the thatched and tin roofs of the village. Part of me was on the way to the village, the other impatiently waited on the hill. Gasimu passed around his jug of water, which I refused. When it got back to him, we picked up the banana hands and started down the hill. I started before everyone else so that I could walk fast and be in the front. As I was going down the hill, I heard gunshots and dogs barking and people screaming and crying. We dropped the bananas and began running in order to avoid the open hillside. A thick smoke started rising from the village. At the top of it, sparks of flame leapt into the air. We hid in the nearby bushes and listened to gunshots and the screams of men, women, and children. The children wailed, men screamed at high pitches that pierced through the forest and covered the shrieks of women. The gunshots finally ceased, and the world was very quiet, as if listening. I told Gassimo that I wanted to go to the village. He held me back, but I shoved him away into the bushes and ran down the path as fast as I could. I didn't feel my legs. When I got to the village, it was completely on fire, and bullet shells covered the ground like mango leaves in the morning. I did not know where to begin looking for my family. Gassimo and my friends had followed me, and we all stood looking at the flaming village. I was sweating because of the heat, but I wasn't afraid to run in between the houses. Nails were popping off tin roofs, and they flew, landing on nearby thatched roofs, increasing the wrath of the fire. As we were watching the flaming tin roof in flight, we heard screams and loud banging a few houses away. We ran behind the houses at the edge of the coffee trees and came upon the house where the cries were coming from. There were people locked in it. The fire was already too much inside. It showed its face through the windows and the roof. We picked up a mortar and banged the door open, but it was too late. Only two people came out, a woman and a young child. They were on fire and ran up and down the village, slamming themselves against everything in their way and going back in the other direction to do the same. The woman fell and stopped moving. The child gave a loud screech and sat next to a tree. He stopped moving. It all happened so fast that we just stood there, rooted to the ground. The child's yelp was still echoing in my head, as if it had taken on a life of its own inside me. Gassimo had wandered away from where I stood. He began screaming from another side of the village. We ran to where he was. More than 20 people lay face down in the earth. They were all lined up, and blood still poured out of their bullet wounds. A stream of it had begun running along the ground, making its way under each body, as if joining them together. Gassimo's sobs grew louder as he turned each body over. Some of their mouths and eyes were open in shapes that showed how much they had cringed as they waited for the bullet from behind. Some had inhaled dirt, perhaps while taking their last breath. The bodies were mostly men in their late and early 20s. A few were younger. On other parts of the village were the half-burnt remains of those who had fought fiercely to free themselves, only to die outside. They lay on the ground in different postures of pain, some reaching for their heads, the white bones in their jaws visible, others curled up like a child in a womb, frozen. The fire had begun to die down, and I was running around the village looking for something I did not want to see. I hesitantly tried to make out the faces of burnt bodies, but it was impossible to tell who they had been. Besides, there were too many of them. They stayed in that house. Gassimo said to me as he pointed toward one of the charred houses. The fire had consumed all the door and the window frames, and the mud that had been pushed in between the sticks was falling off, revealing the ropes through which the remaining fire was making its way. My entire body went into shock. Only my eyes moved, slowly opening and closing. I tried to shake my legs to get my blood flowing, but I fell to the ground, holding my face. On the ground, I felt as if my eyes were growing too big for their sockets. I could feel them expanding, and the pain released my body from the shock. I ran toward the house. Without any fear, I went inside and looked around the smoke-filled rooms. The floors were filled with heaps of ashes. No solid form of a body was inside. I screamed at the top of my lungs and began to cry as loud as I could, punching and kicking with all my might into the weak walls that continued to burn. I had lost my sense of touch. My hands and feet punched and kicked the burning walls, but I couldn't feel a thing. Gassimo and the rest of the other boys began pulling me away from the house. I kept kicking and punching as they dragged me out. "I have looked around for them, but I can't see them anywhere," Gassimo said. I was sitting on the ground with my legs spread in the dirt, holding my head in my hands. I was filled up with anger. I hissed and boiled, and my heart felt as if it was going to explode. At the same time, I felt as if something had literally been placed on my head, heavier than I could ever imagine, and my neck was beginning to ache. If we hadn't stopped to rest on that hill, if we hadn't run into Gassimo, I would have seen my family, I thought. My head was burning as if on fire. I put my hands on both ears and squeezed them in vain. I didn't know what was happening to me. I got up, walked behind Gassimo, and locked his neck under my arms. I squeezed him as hard as I could. "I can't breathe," he said, fighting back. He pushed me off, and I fell next to a pestle. I picked it up and hit Gassimo with it. He fell, and when he got up, his nose was bleeding. My friends held me back. Gassimo looked at me and said sadly, "I didn't know this was going to happen." He walked toward a mango tree and sat by it, wiping the blood falling from his nose. My friends had pinned me to the ground and were vehemently arguing. Some said it was Gassimo's fault that we didn't get to see our parents. Others said it wasn't, and that if it hadn't been for him, we would all be dead. I didn't care. I wanted to see my family, even if it meant dying with them. My friends started fighting amongst themselves, kicking, punching, throwing each other to the ground. Alhaji pushed Juma into one of the houses and his pants caught on fire. He screamed as he rolled in the dirt, slapping the fire off. When Juma got up, he picked up a stone and threw it at Alhaji. It hit Alhaji on the back of his head. Blood ran down his neck. When Alhaji saw his blood, he became furious and ran toward Juma, but Gassimo intervened. He put Alhaji away and tied his bleeding head with a piece of cloth. We were all quiet and angry, and the ruins of the village, where it seemed our journey, had ended. "None of this is anyone's fault," Gassimo said slowly. His words made me angry, and I wanted to rush him again, but we heard loud voices of people approaching the village. We ran into the nearby coffee farm and lay in the dirt watching the village. A group of more than 10 rebels walked into the village. They were laughing and giving each other high fives. Two looked slightly older than me. They had blood on their clothes, and one of them carried the head of a man, which he held by the hair. The head looked as if it was still feeling its hair being pulled. Blood dripped from where the neck had once been. The other rebel carried a gallon of gasoline and a big box of matches. The rebels sat on the ground and started playing cards, smoking marijuana, and boasting about what they had done that day. "We burned about 3 villages today." One skinny guy, who was perhaps enjoying himself more than everyone else, laughed. Another rebel, the only one dressed in full army gear, agreed with him. "Yes, 3 is impressive in just a few hours in the afternoon." He paused, playing with the side of his G3 weapon. "I especially enjoyed burning this village. We caught everyone here. No one escaped. That is how good it was. We carried out the command and executed everyone. Commander will be pleased when he gets here." He nodded, looking at the rest of the rebels, who had stopped the game to listen to him. They all agreed with him, nodding their heads. They gave each other high fives and resumed their game. "Some people escaped in the other 2 villages," the other rebel, who was standing up, said. He paused, rubbing his forehead as if pondering why that had happened, and then continued. "They probably saw the smoke from this village and knew something was happening. We should change our strategy. Next time we must attack all the villages at the same time." The others didn't pay him as much attention as they did when the rebel dressed in the army suit spoke. The rebels went on with their card games, chatting for hours. And then, for no apparent reason, they shot a couple of rounds into the air. Someone in my group moved and the dry coffee leaves made some noise. The rebels stopped playing their game and ran in different directions to take cover. 2 started walking towards us, aiming their guns. They walked fast and then crouched. As if planned, we all got up and started running. Bullets followed us out of the coffee farm and into the forest. Gassimo was in front and he knew where he was going. We all followed him. When we reached the forest's edge, Gassimo stopped and waited for us to catch up. "Follow the path straight," he told us. When I reached him, he tried to smile at me. I do not know why, but it made me angrier. I ran past him and followed the narrow path on which grass had grown. I was behind Alhaji, who parted the bushes like a diver heading to the surface for air. Some of the bushes slapped me, but I didn't stop. The gunshots grew louder behind us. We ran for hours, deeper into the forest. The path had ended, but we kept running until the sky swallowed the sun and gave birth to the moon. The bullets continued to fly behind us, but now their redness could be seen as they pierced through the bushes. The moon disappeared and took the stars with it, making the sky weep. Its tears saved us from the red bullets. We spent the night breathing heavily under the bushes, soaked with rain. The hunters had given up. Gassimo began to cry like a child. It always made me afraid when such things happen. In my younger years, I learned that grown men cry only when they have no other choice. Gassimo rolled on the ground in pain. When we finally summoned the courage to pick him up, we found out why he was crying. He had been shot sometime as we ran away the previous night. His right leg was bleeding and had begun to swell. He was holding his side and didn't want to remove his hand. Alhaji lifted Gassimo's hand. His side was bleeding as well. It was as if his hand had been holding his blood from flowing. It rushed out of him like water breaking banks. He began to sweat. Alhaji asked me to contain the blood by placing my hand on Gassimo's side. I did, but his blood continued to slip through my fingers. He looked at me, his eyes sadly beginning to sink deeper into their sockets. He managed to raise his weak right hand to hold the wrist of my hand that was on his side. He had stopped sobbing, even though tears still ran down his eyes, but not as much as the blood that he was losing. Musa couldn't bear the sight of blood any longer. He fainted. Alhaji and I took Gassimo's shirt off and tied it around his side to contain his blood. The rest of our companions watched with tense faces. Musa woke up and joined them. In between Gassimo's gasps, he told us that there was a wali, a place outside villages where people process coffee or other crops, nearby, and that if we went back toward the farm, he would show us how to rejoin the path and get to it. We had taken the wrong turn during the night. Gassimo put his arms around my shoulder and Alhaji's. We lifted him up and began walking slowly through the bushes. We set him down every few minutes and wiped his sweaty forehead. It was past midday when Gassimo began heaving, his entire body shaking. He asked us to set him down. He held his stomach and began to roll in pain from one side to the other. His heaving increased and he stopped rolling. He lay flat on his back, staring at the sky. His eyes were fixed on something and his legs vibrated and stopped. His hands did the same, and then finally his fingers, but his eyes remained opened, transfixed, on the top of the forest. "Let's pick him up," Alhaji's voice was shaking. I put Gassimo's arm around my neck. Alhaji did the same, and we walked with him, his feet dragging on the ground. His arms were cold. His body was still sweating, and he continued bleeding. We didn't say a word to each other. We all knew what had happened. When we finally got to the wali, Gassimo's eyes were still open. Alhaji closed them. I sat by him. His blood was on my palm and my wrist. I regretted hitting him with a pestle. The dry blood was still in his nose. I began to cry softly. I couldn't cry as much as I wanted to. The sun was getting ready to leave the sky. It had come out to take Gassimo with it. I just sat by him, unable to think. My face began to harden. When the breeze blew against it, I felt how my flesh resisted and joined the cool wind. All through the night, no sleep came to me. My eyes watered and dried over and over again. I did not know what to say. For a few minutes, I tried to imagine what it felt like for Gassimo when his fingers vibrated to let the last air out of his body.